This is Don't Panic, episode number 410, recorded June 10th, 2026. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Don't Panic, the podcast that talks about both things and stuff. I'm Sean Jennings, joined as always by two guys who would absolutely make the World Cup of Friendship finals. Spoiler alert, they tie because they're both great friends. It's Colby Rabideau and Dan Miller. Good evening, gentlemen.
Can you tie in the World Cup?
Not in the final, I don't think, but you know, in the spirit of gamesmanship and cooperation, you know, we're all winners. But you're also talking to a guy who only ever won participation trophies in his limited sports career, so.
Same. Today, I was walking home, and I walked by, well, A, there were helicopters, like, hovering over the city, and then I was walking, and there were all these, like, police cars on the side of the road, and then there was a huge crowd of people outside this hotel. I was like, oh, this must be some kind of, like, World Cup thing. I was trying to look up on my phone if like some like large scale crime was happening and I needed to like walk home a different way to not
no, just famous soccer guy.
Yeah. No, I was worried, but just the World Cup. No big deal.
Oh, the Herzegovian soccer team is staying at the Radisson. Everybody
right.
Get excited.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Are you going to the World Cup, Sean?
Okay, I couldn't. I believe it or not, see, I would be cheating. I have to be honest to my co-host. I do have the NBA finals on the iPad here while we're doing the show. Sorry. Between that and the Stanley Cup finals, I'm focused on that soccer. I don't care. Global sports, I don't care. Things that are expensive, I don't care. But they are doing like a fan activation in Boston, Colby, you could go to.
Like they turn on all the window fans. What's that?
Yeah. If you have to ask, Colby, I don't know if you're invited.
I think this is marketing speak. Activation.
Well, I was about to say fan activation. That's literally what they're calling it. Someone said, you know, this is like the most corpo like World Cup ever, and it really is. But yes, they are officially calling them fan activations, and yes, it is just they kind of rent out a park somewhere and.
Oh, maybe that's what was happening today.
There you go. Catch the fever.
So it is also in Seattle, and I was talking to someone who bought tickets, I think, or was going to buy tickets. Anyways, you didn't ask, Sean, but no, I'm not going. if you wanted to buy tickets at like retail, you could not pick which game you were going to see.
Well, you didn't even know what the schedule was. You could see literally any two teams on earth. They were selling tickets even before the schedule was out. Yes.
Right. But for a location was my understanding. You'd pick your location.
It for Seattle, but it could be Hungary versus Kuwait. And you would just like, that's the game you got.
Yeah. Yeah.
That seems like a little bit of a scam.
A little bit? It's absolutely. But the funny thing is, they ended up having a bunch of tickets left over because they were so overpriced and so hard to get that they ended up having in some cities, they were like the tickets plummeted in price. So I don't know how many people are thrilled to be going out to Foxborough. At least in Seattle, you're pretty downtown. Now, Dan, do you ever go? I know a couple of you go down Red Sox games and Patriot games and things. Dan, do you ever do any of? Have you ever done any of the Seahawks, the Kraken, the Mariners, the Sounders?
That's the hockey team, and then you miss the women's basketball team, that Storm.
Well, the Seattle Storm, of course.
One of Lena's coworkers invited us to go see the men's soccer team. Oh, and there's a women's soccer team too. I don't remember their name. And then Lena's old company took us to a Mariners game, and it was both fine. I thought, like, because I don't have a lot of major league sports experience. I think I have been to zero ever NFL games. I have been to a handful of NBA games. I think only the Brooklyn Nets, actually, twice. Brooklyn Nets twice. The baseball game you took us to in Houston, and then these two. I think that's it. I've seen a lot more college sports. But anyway, so I don't have a lot to compare it to. But of the things I do... Oh, and I went to a Mets game once and stood under a TV in the rain waiting in line for Shake Shack. And the TV, like, outdoor enclosure started leaking, and then the water was really warm as it fell on me. And that,
it's a
that
very
is my
New
most
York experience.
That's my most enduring memory of that. But anyways, amongst all of those experiences, I thought that the food at the Seattle stadiums was really good. Like, it kind of reminded me of like the timeout thing in Boston or something like that, where it's like a smorgasbord of things, of like outposts of places that people actually want to go to, but are also unique to Seattle. It's not like McDonald's, or it's not like generic burger joint. It's like actually unique and good food. Extremely expensive. But like there's no other place you can go to and go to all these places at the same time either. So I thought what I tell people is I think it's worth it just to go once for the food. And then you can say you tried Ivar's Clams and you tried Dick's Burgers and you tried all these things. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, that was very popular online.
Yeah, this is the ferry boat that holds your food at the Mariners game. Highly collectible.
Wild.
Yeah, no, ballpark food has really gone to another level for sure. No, I think baseball is the ultimate hangout at sport. Like, you don't have to watch the game at all. The tickets are usually reasonably priced enough where you can just go and spend an evening hanging out, and it's not intense or like it's really casual, which I do like about baseball games in general, especially minor league. Where you can really have a pretty good time. Actually, Colby, I owe you a text message. Our alma mater is doing a Hartford Yard Goats baseball game night in Hartford, and you pay one price and all the food's included and you get the tickets and the drinks and the whole thing. Damn. And maybe one of our other pals might want to come. So I owe you a note on that.
All right. What day of the week is that?
I don't know off the top. I think it's a weekend.
Okay, great.
But our Connecticut friend might be interested as well. So, no, sports are, yes, go ahead, Colby.
Oh, I was going to say the Red Sox are so bad this year. Going to the Red Sox games is like going to minor league baseball. It's great. Just walk over.
A couple of weeks ago, your Springfield Thunderbirds, minor league hockey team, made it into the later rounds of the playoffs, the Calder Cup playoffs, despite being absolutely terrible. They were 500 on the season. So my dad and I went to a game. It was game three of that round, and I'm not joking, the stadium was maybe 70% full, maybe. And this is the Mass Mutual Center. This is like 9,000 people, maybe. Like, it's not a big arena, and it was only 70% full, and it was really kind of sad. It was a great game. We had a good time, and the fans that were there were very enthusiastic, but it was not a sellout. And I'm like, oh no. Felt very bad for those poor guys. But they won. So, and then didn't win the cup, but
alas.
They tried nonetheless.
Yeah. That's all you can do.
Now, it's been a little bit, been about a month since we've seen each other. What's anything new? You know, we have our classic topics here on the program, the Home Improvement Hour, the Small Business Corner, all those, anything new of note from anybody? Worth talking about?
I got a grill.
Oh,
did that happen? That's yeah.
It's man hour.
Yep. Oh yeah, yeah. So I had three things have happened to me since the last time we podcasted. One, I got a grill. Two, I got a lawnmower. And three, I had to clean out the gutters because the gutters were clogged.
All right. Well, let's start in order then. Tell us about this grill.
It's just a Weber charcoal grill.
So you went charcoal?
I saw the charcoal. So yeah, that sounds like an intentional choice.
Yep. I just didn't want to spend that much money on a grill. And they only cost like $100. But it's great.
You have one of those towers, the coal tower?
Yeah, those are the two pieces of equipment I have. It's the grill and the chimney, they call it. And it's it turns out it's pretty straightforward. Mostly, I did mess it up one time because I closed the vents on the grill too much and like most of the charcoal went out, which was is not what you're supposed to do. So that was fun. And then, yeah, the lawn is, we planted grass and the grass is now long enough that it needs to be cut. But I don't have like a shed really or anywhere to put a nice lawnmower. So I got one of those like manual push lawnmowers.
Stop.
It weirdly enough costs exactly the same as the grill.
All right.
Colby, I've been considering getting one of those. Because we bought like the world's cheapest electric weed whacker slash lawnmower, but it's basically the lawnmower is basically you turn a weed whacker on its side and with a wheel, and it's not a very good lawnmower. My neighbor has one of those, and our yard is like probably the size of your room, Sean. So it's not like, or smaller maybe even in terms of grass. So it's like, it seems like his does a better job than ours does. So what's your review?
Our grass is not like fully formed yet, but like, I thought it did a fine job. It's like a little bit more exercise, maybe. Like it does take some,
passes.
Well, no, it's just like, I guess it's hard to push a lawnmower too, but it's like, it takes some, effort. Like you're turning the blades with your lawn.
I'm surprised that Scar doesn't just drive a giant tractor lawnmower across the road and just do it all for you.
That's a good question. The problem is it's like a little bit far. Like lawnmowers don't go that fast.
I remember, Dan, this is the country. They're all, even in the compound, they're miles apart.
Right. It's like, you know, it is like a quarter of a mile away. Like, and it's like down the road, and then our driveway is pretty long. So it would take a while for Scar to drive over. He does do the snow blowing, which I appreciate. But that's not a bigger vehicle. So,
How flat is your property?
Mine or Dan's?
Yours, Colby's.
It's pretty flat. The parts with grass are pretty flat.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's I think you're spot on with the manual, because I was thinking about getting a new mower. I ended up not doing it, but they're just so expensive. I mean, everything is these days. What are you going to do? But anything, especially the battery ones, anything with a battery is out of control.
Yeah, yeah. I compromised and I got the real mower, and I got like a battery weed whacker.
Perfect.
Which I thought was a good combination. Because the weed whacker is literally in my office right now.
Are you now going to be in the market for a shed?
Oh yeah, a shed's on the list. It's on the list of expenses.
That's how you know you've really made it as like a real homeowner, is you have so much outdoor junk that you need another building.
Right. An outbuilding, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
So that's been fun. Yeah. And then we were there last weekend and it was raining really hard. And I was sitting on the couch like near the sliding door. I was like, man, it sounds like a waterfall outside. Like what is going on? And there was a huge puddle because the gutter was just like overflowing. And there were leaves in there.
But you got a lot of trees.
Yeah.
Oh, from like the winter?
I guess so. I don't know when they got in there. It wasn't a ton of leaves. It was just enough leaves to plug the spout. So I borrowed a ladder from my dad and I climbed up there and I scooped it out. And then I called the gutter guy to come install like screens over it.
When you're in the woods, that's smart.
Yeah. Solve the root cause, you know.
You just wait until you got to go buy a leaf blower.
Yeah.
It's coming. We've talked about this on the show before. The battery ecosystem. You pick a brand of battery and then you buy all the tools. Do you have a brand?
I chose the family brand. for the smart trimmer, which is Ego. Ego.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of crap. Like, my dad has like one of the push lawnmower thing, and like, I don't know. He's all jeeped up about it. Yeah. So I figured I would do that one because there were extra batteries laying around.
Yes, and very easy to borrow things.
Exactly.
That's as at work, I deal with a couple different brands of drills and other tools. And so I've got like four of these batteries and six of these batteries, and you never have the right one at the right time. And it's better to stay consistent.
By the way, Sean, I think I saw on Instagram today, it's National Roofing Week or something like that.
It is National Roofing Week. Thank you, Dan. I have nothing more to say about that, but it is okay. National Roofing Week.
You doing any activations?
No activations. No fan engagements. We're not not doing any of that. But I was gonna, you know, I talked about the entire saga of my lawn on the show. Over the years.
Is that your lawn, or is that a golf course they're playing the Masters at next weekend?
I know, Dan. Believe it or not, this is a heck of an effort here. And it's looking great.
Oh, look at
that. It's looking like a million bucks. That's something else. But that's my front lawn.
Wow.
And it's looking like $1 million. So a lot of watering and mowing and lawn care people and a whole army of experts working on it. But it's good, but it grows like it is a lot of work. I am mowing constantly and it is not fun, but it looks great. And I literally the only thing that makes it worth it is when I drive up to my house after work every day and I pull up the street and it just looks friggin' awesome. And I'm like, all right, I guess it's kind of worth it. I'm trying to see if I've got, I don't want to show all my pictures on the, I have a mushroom problem. I have a big mushroom problem.
Are you okay? Yard. Do you need help, Sean?
Listen, if they were edible or sellable, I'd be happy. But no, they're grown everywhere because, Colby, my lawn is too wet and too nutrient rich. I did too good of a job, apparently.
Right. Right.
And so they're coming to, and then some pictures of the, I've been doing landscaping. I've been off this week. So I've been working on putting stone.
That's a good shed you got there.
I was going to say, and that's a lot of solar panels on the corner of that shed. how many IP addresses does that take up?
One is just a motion light, but yes, the other is my Ring camera. Yes, it is. You caught me. I think I've got three on solar panels and then several more that are plugged in.
This is not really home improvement hour, but we went to my uncle's cabin a couple weeks ago. And and they were telling me like, oh, we're thinking about getting Starlink, and I have often decried the state of the Wi-Fi in there, and so I was sketching out like, okay, how would you make this better? And then I was like, okay, well, you would, because they do have the Wi-Fi running all the time so that they can control like the heat and stuff remotely. So then I was like, well, how do you get really low powered Wi-Fi that uses as little energy as possible? And I found out this crazy thing, and I'm not enough of an electrician to like fully understand, but you know, devices that have bricks that get hot. I forget if that's AC to DC converter or something like that, I think. Anyways, the like lithium ion batteries that people use for like in-home batteries, those do AC or whatever it is. They don't technically need one of those converters. But there's these big inverters that are in someone's like battery setup that converts the energy from the battery into a form that you can like plug in the outlet. But then you plug in your Wi-Fi router and it reconverts it back to the, it like de-inverts it or something. So what people do is they hardwire in all of these gadgets directly into the battery. And it saves like 20% of energy usage. It blew my mind. And you can, there's all these products online. People will be selling like, oh, it's Eero, but direct to battery something.
You know, Dan, you always bring something new that I defeats the laws of science.
Well, it does. So over the past 2 years, I've been on the Technology Connections kick, and the Technology Connections video where he talks about energy, like the one about the hot water heaters, he talks about how, like, well, heat is energy. And so anytime you want to make something hotter, you have to use energy. And it can only be so efficient, and it'll never be 100% efficient. So on the flip side, if one of these things is getting hot, then that implies that it's wasting energy. That is like energy going into the air instead of going into your router or your laptop or whatever it is. So it's passed the sniff test for me, but I can't explain it any further than that.
I was going to say, can you explain it to your uncle?
I think so. So maybe you both will appreciate this. They have revamped. Remember on the show when we were talking about the Google Notebook LM or whatever it was, and I had the Notebook LM make a podcast out of my uncle's cabin manual because it was the first PDF I had in my downloads folder? Well, he has revamped the complete rewrite. And there's a whole appendix section at the end where he goes into detail on how exactly the electricity works, why you can't let it go below a certain percentage, what to do if it does, including like, okay, then go under the deck. There's a gas can and a generator. Now put the gas in the generator and now disconnect these wires and hook these up and run it for about 4 hours. And that should get you about 20%. So he probably understands this better than I do. I just don't know if he knew that there are products out there where you can like Google Starlink, whatever the term is, to find a thing that saves you 20% on your energy costs.
That's pretty cool.
I thought it was very cool. And another thing that inspired this, I think, was because my in-laws were in town and my father-in-law asked me, can you charge the car off of these solar panels? And I was like, I don't think so. But I don't know. So I was like, how would you figure it out? Like, and there's all this math you can do. What would you guess? I guess Colby's has been the one who's been there yet. Colby, if I drained those batteries and put it all into my car, how many percentage points would I get on my car, would you estimate?
Like 4?
15%.
Oh, that's pretty good. I mean, I'm trying to remember what the battery, like, they're just in a closet. It's not like
it's not
like a huge apparatus.
I would say they're like the size of two big desktop computers.
But that's also why people feed electricity from their cars back into their house and back into the grid, because they hold so much.
And I had always heard of people being really excited about that. And I was like, I guess. But now I'm like, oh, okay. So on the flip side, if I ran my house like my uncle does the cabin, then I could go for like 5 days off of with no, you know, no recharge off of my car, which would be cool. Now, again, for the same reason, I don't think I can actually do that because I think I would need the inverter thingy-majiggy. I would need a bunch of hardware, I think, to do that.
Well, my brother is a big Ryobi guy. You know, he's got all the tools and he has a million batteries. So he bought this thing where you stick like 8 different Ryobi batteries on it and it becomes like a power source. If you lose power, you plug things into it. And he was all excited. He goes, Sean, it's incredible. I can plug my fridge into it for like 4 hours in case my power goes out. I'm like, 4 hours? Your food is still cold after 4 hours. What? That's like not impressive.
Don't plug in the fridge.
I was about to say, turns out it's enough power to run a weed whacker, but not enough to like power your whole house. So I was like, oh, okay. I kind of, that math is not in your favor.
Nice. Batteries.
Batteries. It's crazy.
That's cool.
Any other new tech stuff in our lives? I wish I could say I had some. I've been using AI a little bit more here and there.
Oh, okay.
I am finding it infiltrating my life for work, especially as a marketing guy and having some assistance with writing or generating image ideas. It's actually become very helpful. The problem is he doesn't listen to the show. And I always say nice things about him. My boss has also found out about AI, which is a problem because me and my team, we're the marketing team. We do the designs. He can now generate his thoughts into actual images. And then say, what do you think about this? And I have to politely, he's very good sometimes, but I have to be very polite and say, that's not a thing. Or it's like, why don't we give it to our real designer and he'll make it look good? which can become, so, you know, good tool in the wrong hands.
So I think you are experiencing a thing that, at least for me, has been common throughout my tech career, Colby. I'm curious if you've had these experiences where, in the before times, before AI, sometimes your manager would get a bug up their butt or would suddenly have a lot of free time and would start trying to make changes to the code base. But they know/remember just enough about how to do things that they can actually do it, but not enough to actually do a good job. And then what inevitably happens is someone else has to actually finish it. And now it's the worst of both worlds, because you have this thing that you didn't write and don't understand, and also it's not that good, but now you have to finish it because your manager expects you to, and also it's difficult to criticize it. In the AI world, I don't think anyone at my job listens to this podcast, that has now ratcheted up a level. It used to be that the directors and the VPs, there's no chance in hell they were ever going to have time to do any of this stuff. And so you didn't have to worry about it. Plus, you know, they are probably statistically even more out of practice with regards to how to do it than your manager is. That is no longer true. They are no longer limited by the amount of time it takes to actually do it. So now you have people even higher rank dropping in and being like, I think we should do this. And also, here's a thing that implements it completely. And you're like, okay.
I'll plus one that same experience. But the weirdest thing is that, like, it's still the case that it's like not good, but it's so much harder to figure out what about it isn't good.
Exactly. Because it's easier to just shoot down an idea versus right. something to like, no, here it is. You can just take it. Right. It's fine.
And
just
it's like,
use it.
This looks okay. Like, at first glance, this seems fine. And like, inevitably what happens is it gets merged. And then like 3 weeks later, you find out what was not fine about it when it goes terribly wrong.
Well, you know, but I have a different angle on that experience, which is, but I also have to play interference for my designers because I don't want to piss them off. I don't want to be rude or impolite to them. And so I kind of have to be like, here's this thing this guy made in 2 seconds in AI. We want you to use it. And I get like the eye roll. And so I've got to play like kind of referee between the two sides of like, no, AI actually is like, I'm not going to pretend it's not useful. It has expedite things, but it's also not going to replace you. So don't worry about it. And I've kind of got to kind of make everyone happy. It's an odd position to be in.
Yeah.
So now, Sean, have you gone to the next step where the AI are doing things and you are not directly prompting it to do it? It is reacting to other signals, emails that you receive or like Zapier or something like that?
Not for work. So things are pretty locked down. I can't really get into my Outlook email, for example, without doing it pretty manually and outside the laws of the company. So I'm a little limited there, but I'd be lying if I didn't say I didn't install OpenClaw and play with it a little bit on my machine. You know, I'm just the marketing guy. I get it. But, you know, I can do some tech stuff, too. Remember, AI has made me, and I say this with all due respect, kind of like you guys. So I'm just saying, which, by the way, this is exactly how my designers feel when
limited power.
So I, yeah.
Now, Colby, have you used this thing at all?
No,
neither have I. So, Sean, you have to give us the review. This is like when someone on the show finally gets an Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah. So, well, the review is not good. So here's the thing. There's a foundational thing you need for it to work, which is a powerful always on computer, either locally or in the cloud. And I don't have either. And I don't want to pay to host it on a server, and I would put it on my laptop, but it's not the juiciest and it's on and off and stuff. So I've set it up. It's ran a few things. Like, I can ask it to do stuff and it'll do it. But any sort of ongoing tasks, it has to be always on. So I haven't really figured out a way to make it like practically useful. But yeah, asking it to run things and set up things and it can do it. But for me, it's like if I ran a small business or something, like I also just don't have a good personal use for it. My personal life is pretty under control. I'm not that busy of a guy. To be honest, for work, I do think
what
I
about all your contractors? And how many people do you have working on that lawn?
My God. Yeah, I would love to have OpenClaw call them up and and yell at them for not doing a good job. But I can think of some ideas. It's just, again, I'm not really, you need more equipment to really do that. So someday I'll get a Mac Mini and I'll have it running here on the desk. And
well, not anymore. You're going to have to get a Raspberry Pi or something else. You can't get Mac Minis anymore.
I know. Well, that's the problem, is everyone needs these always on machines. You know, it was crazy. I don't
even
know.
Do you have a Mac Mini you want to resell?
I actually have two Mac Minis.
Dude, let's go. Put one in the mail. The funny thing is today I was writing an article for an industry publication, and I had a version and I didn't like it. So I plugged it into ChatGPT and I said, hey, gave it my thoughts, blah, blah, blah. It responded in like the second I hit enter, it already responded. And I'm like, how does it even do it that fast? Like, I understand how it does it. How does it do it the second I click enter? It already has the answer. It blows my mind. But I am finding AI to be annoyingly practical, which is a problem.
That's useful.
Like, nowadays, I don't Google stuff anymore. I have a ChatGPT Pro subscription, and I go, the mushrooms in my yard. I said, what's up with the mushrooms in my yard? They're like, send me a picture. I sent it a picture. It told me the answer.
I asked ChatGPT about our lawn woes as well. I mean, I guess I asked Claude about the lawn woes, and that was another checkbox in the, it seems like we're watering too much category.
Well, I'll give you a vague example. My mother's on a lot of pills, way too many pills. Anyway, she was getting, she was having side effects after having her midday pills. I put the list of pills into ChatGPT, which, by the way, don't do that, but I did it. And it said, no, actually, one of these could be causing the issue. She stopped taking it midday, and she felt better. No one of her doctors did that. So, you know, I'm not trying to make it sound like the be-all, end-all, and there's certainly, you know, caveats.
Did you tell her that something said that it would help?
Well, I told her I fed it into AI. I told her I fed it into chat. It was a medication that was safe enough to just take in the morning instead of midday. Like I said, it wasn't... I'm very, like, if it said to me for the mushrooms, oh, throw this chemical on your yard, like, I would check with my yard guys before, you know, my lawn care guys before I did that. Like, I like to think I'm conscious enough to not just take it at blind faith, but if it's a low stakes kind of thing, yeah, sure.
Nice.
Which, by the way, this is a good opportunity to pivot. Guys, can you believe it? Next week is our 13th year anniversary of this show.
Wow.
Just think about that for 1 second. This is episode 410, 13 years. And of course, famously,
driving age.
At this point, there's no stopping us. You know, we're in that, we're tweens now, and lucky number 13. And famously, in our very first episode, we covered WWDC, the debut of iOS 7. With the skeuomorphic design, and now
the anti-skeuomorphic design, now
that's
sort of
right.
Infamous release,
yes, with the felt game center and the
all that stuff went away.
I miss
it. Went very much away. It's all about glass now. And so WWDC was this week, and their big keynote announcement was on Monday, and I figured it wouldn't be a Don't Panic June anniversary episode without us talking about it. I don't know if you guys had a chance to catch any of it or watch any or read anything about it.
Yeah. I watched some. Before the show, I mean, I assumed we would talk about this as it is tradition. I went to The Verge, as is also tradition, and got slapped with a paywall.
Paywall, baby.
So I wasn't prepared for that. So I don't.
It's tough in the media world, buddy. I'm telling you. Yeah. Well, the good news is I have some other articles. So really not the like biggest announcement I think they've ever had in terms of flashy features. They themselves summarized it in three categories, which was sort of the performance, the trust and safety, and then the AI and intelligence piece. Starting with the performance, it was just overall upgrades to make the software work better. No big flashy features, just speed improvements. They put up a slide with a whole bunch of stuff. I'll pass the slider for liquid glass. I'll talk about a bunch of these. AirDrop is 80% faster, more seamless swapping between Wi-Fi and cellular. Setting an alarm volume that's independent of your system's volume. Apple Maps flyover enhanced with better images, custom EQ for AirPods, blah, blah, blah. The list goes on. Extra large widgets, and a bunch of stuff like that. And did any of those stand out to you? The non-AI stuff?
There definitely were some things that stood out, but I need to look at the list again. I actually have a text version of this pulled up somewhere in one of my bajillion tabs.
Yeah, I mean, I always love when they do a, you know, every 3 or 4 years, Apple does this where they're like, this is the performance upgrade and we've cleaned it up. And usually
every 3 or 4 years or every, when was the last one?
They did one.
Snow Leopard.
They did one a couple years ago. No, they did one a couple years ago where they were like, no, we're really focused on performance. I don't remember which one it was. I wish I did. I think it's great because they've crammed a lot of features in. They're smoothing some stuff out, making it work better around the edges. I'm hoping battery life is really helped by this. They talked a lot about speed, not a lot about battery life. I'm curious if those things are going to interact.
Okay, I have it now. The number one thing I'm most excited for is improved Apple Music streaming latency. It takes forever to start a freaking song relative to Spotify, and I don't feel like there's a good reason for that. Are you excited for Elsif support and shortcuts, Sean?
I'm excited for the shortcuts AI thing.
You know, like I said, I don't think there's much to talk about here. We can pivot over to the AI stuff. I think the two best things to come out of the AI announcement are Siri extensions or Safari extensions you can write yourself and shortcuts you can write yourself, because they are the like programming-y parts of Siri that are exciting to me. All the other stuff ChatGPT basically does now, just not as well integrated into my phone. It can do directions and it can write recipes and it can do all that stuff. The stuff that messes with the OS or that customizes stuff to me, I'm really excited. And just the simple idea of that they would just let you write your own extension to customize the browser, I'm like, okay, that was a light bulb moment. I was pretty jazzed.
Nice. I love this new era of like hacker Sean.
Yeah.
You know, laugh. I have always been a workflow process guy. And I am always a look for ways to improve it or streamline it guy. And AI has slotted that into my life to make things faster. So the idea that I can, and by the way, I'm a Chrome user, and this might be the thing that finally gets me to switch to Safari on my Mac. That, and I think the automated tab groups thing is interesting, though I kind of want to see it in practice to see how practical it is, because I do tend to have a lot of tabs. But just the simple idea, I can be like, this type of web page, I always take this action on. So create an extension to repeat that, or this type of thing, I always save here, create. Like, I like the ability. I have shortcuts pinned to my dock. Now, they're rudimentary because that shortcuts is impossible for me to understand. Legitimately, it's gobbledygook. But the fact that
it is, it's not just you, Sean. It is extremely difficult.
What a relief. And so the fact that you can do it in natural language is pretty cool. And I'm really, even more so for not necessarily me, but what other people come up with, I'm really excited to then steal and use for myself.
To go back to something you were talking about, sorry, this is a bit of a non sequitur, but I was just thinking about it because I was trying to Google something. You're talking about not Googling things anymore and just using ChatGPT or Claude. I have now stopped paying for Kagi, my beloved Kagi, although I think it is still a better search engine. And I've stopped paying for Claude, and I just use Google Gemini because it's free. It for now has no ads, and it works just as well for stupid stuff like that. So I can highly recommend trying that.
That's a good idea.
I by the way, and I strongly agree, the only reason I use ChatGPT is because their image generation model is fantastic. And I have found works best for what I use. So because I do generate a pretty good amount of images or designs or logos or ideas and stuff. Gemini is great for searches though, and that text-based stuff. I totally agree.
Dan, what's your work model of choice?
Well, okay. we're gonna get Let's see where to begin. I actually think that now, so Sean, I don't know if you know, but confusingly, Anthropic calls their consumer-facing product Claude, but I think more helpfully, their like coding agent thing, Claude Code. OpenAI has ChatGPT, but then for coding, they call it
Codex.
Codex, thank you. I think they're interchangeable on the actual quality of the results, and I think that these. And so what has now changed for me, though, is now we have the ability to create infinite VMs in the cloud and run things simultaneously, which is good and bad because it's very brain melting. But I think it is helpful to have at least two, possibly three things going simultaneously. But then if you do and you send out a PR, how the hell do you know which box it originated from so you can resume the conversation and like update things or fix CI or whatever. So what I liked about the Codex app, desktop app until today was that you in the left sidebar, you could have a project and it would tell you which computer that project lives on all from one place. They broke that today, and now it just unhelpfully says Figma, like 25,000 times down the side, which is unhelpful. But then what I did was I made it so that on each coder box, or on each, it gives away how it works, but on each VM, when the VM is created, I create a git config that prefixes all the branches with the host name of the VM so that then also from GitHub, I can tell which box to go back to. So, and I think the Claude app is just terrible. And having all of these, it's truly awful. Did you see the thing today where it's like, oh, it starts like a 1.5 gigabyte VM every time you send a message and then shuts it down. It's like, oh my God. It's clear that whoever works on like the Codex app cares more and is not just like crapping this thing out the other side. So I've mostly been using Codex, but not because I feel like it's necessarily that much better. But I think it, in my opinion, shows how commodified this stuff is getting, where now it's not the base layer. It's the stuff that they provide you on top of it.
Yeah, I have found the same thing, and I do wonder if there is a future in custom developed front ends for these AIs that you set up to be more to your liking, that work better in your workflow, where you're still paying the same APIs and the same resources, but you're able to present it to yourself in a different way. Because that's something I've played with a little bit with APIs. And you know, I may have played a little bit with a Cursor or Lovable, or, you know, I play around a little bit. And I found the same thing where the raw chat interface isn't great, but if you can kind of build out your own workflow, front end, point and click stuff, it makes it more usable.
Nice. Yeah. So that's my current, workflow. I am interested in, similarly to you, I think, Sean, automating some of the like other stuff in my life, mostly work related things. And I was inspired that this was possible because someone at work gave a talk. It was like a lightning talk. And they were like, hey, I asked some model to look for ways to make the code faster. And I told it to not give up. And it worked for like 3 days. And then like these two PRs came out the other side, and they are actually, you know, demonstrable speed improvements. And so I was like, oh, okay. And so it wasn't this, Colby, but you can imagine doing this. I went like, okay, hey, agent, update us to the new version of React. Don't give up. And it did it. And the website loaded, and I looked at it, and there was some like insane patches But it did work. So I was like, okay, that might be a bridge too far. But there are probably things like that where I could just be like, hey, look for new versions of this library and then like upgrade us, like prototype, give me a PR that shows me how much of a pain in the ass it would like be to actually update this and then let me make the decision. It was like a new kind of workflow that was not previously possible. Oh, well, actually, a third thing on this real quick. I think this was like the real, I think, because one of my opinions is, like I was saying, you can really only have two or three things happening at the same time. But then you multiply that by all the people you're working with. There is like an overall throughput limit on the amount of work that can be done. And so, and the things that are most important are often complicated and ambiguous and don't benefit that much from these things. And so I don't think like the overall throughput has increased that much. But what has increased is like for like the floor of things that you can do that were previously not that important, but maybe a ton of work. Now you can reasonably do those things. So one of those things was we had this problem where doing certain things is really slow. And I had a theory that it wouldn't be slow if we changed literally everything about how the code is structured and how it works. But like, you know, in the before times, that's just a theory. Like, well, like maybe someday I can like impassionately plea to some director or VP and maybe we could staff a team, like, but probably not. And so like, that's just something I think about in the shower. But then this time I was like, okay, agent thing. Here's some stats about our code. It's like X 100,000 packages. And the average number of dependencies of each package is Y. Create a new TypeScript code base that also has these characteristics. And then it like turn, and it did. It was just like a bunch of BS, like gobbledygook. But that's fine, because I'm just testing like the connections. This is like a type checker thing. And I was like, okay, now run the type checker. Is it just as slow as the real one? And I was like, yes. Like, okay, great. Now make this change. Like, let's reduce the number of packages by half and run it again. Is it any faster? The answer was no. But I was like, okay, great. Like that invalidates my hypothesis. I thought maybe if we had fewer packages that things would be easier. It's not. I would have never been able to prove that before. It's not like directly writing code, but it is improving. It raises the floor on how rigorous you can be about things.
Yep. Agreed.
Anyways.
Now, WWDC. When it comes to Siri,
right?
Well, this is right, because the idea now is they're going to shove it into your phone, and you're not going to have a choice. It's going to be there. It has its own dedicated app you can't delete, and it's going to be able to pop up and do all kinds of things for you. I'm encouraged by the fact that it has a Google backend, because as you mentioned, Dan, Gemini is very good, and Siri historically has been very mediocre. So there's some encouragement that it won't be kind of crappy. I mean, are you guys excited for any sort of day-to-day Siri use case, or is this more of a kind of wait and see, use it when it pops? Like, will you talk to Siri?
I don't know. I feel like back in the day when Siri rolled around, I was like excited by the idea of Siri. Sounds so cool. But the reality of Siri is not good. Right. Listen, like,
how many of those Echo Pucks did Amazon sell? A gazillion of them. And then we all got them home and realized, oh, these suck. Right. They don't work. If you don't say the exact right phrase every time, it doesn't know what it's doing.
Exactly. And you know, like, I have my like three things that I ask Siri about that I have memorized. You know, I know the incantation. I can do it every time, and mostly it only changes every like 6 to 9 months. And I can keep up. You know, it's convenient enough that I will figure out whatever the new incantation is when something breaks. But you know, I am hopefully optimistic. I'm like optimistic that they'll actually ship something this time, and B, you know, that like maybe it'll be cool now, or like useful, or you know, like the idea is cool, but it's just that it, like, you try something and it doesn't work.
And you can't, like, there's no, if it doesn't work, there's no recourse. It's not like it helps you. And it's like, you can talk to it about, like, oh, what, this is what I meant. It's just like, that's what, you know, you get what you get. And it's bad. So the speaking of raising the floor is pretty low.
Yeah. As a parent, I find myself using it more as your hands are less off, less frequently unoccupied. And it would be nice to be able to chain things together in a reasonable way and to be able to like send messages to people more naturally. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Well, here's
but I'm
sort
mostly
of a
looking forward to it from the freaking HomePod. And for the second WWC, but we're doing it better. We're doing AI this time, but better. They didn't mention it at all.
Well, this is my prediction for the fall, the hardware event in the fall, because I also, we didn't talk about it, the home AI update using 4K cameras where it can actually analyze what's happening in the video, automatically chop it up, which, by the way, other companies have done, can chop it up and kind of segment, you know, give you live updates because it's using AI to analyze your video. They got to be ready for the HomePod with a screen, right? This is now. I mean, I think finally with Siri for AI, you can write custom shortcuts. So you're customizing it for your home. All the apps are integrated. You can just talk to it and it'll do stuff. It's got to be the time for it, right?
I'm so ready for the screened HomePod.
I think now would be the time to make the move into the home device market. Maybe I'm wrong because I don't, by the way, I hardware is many months off, but I don't know what other exciting hardware there's going to be other than an iPhone 18. Everyone's talking about folding phones. I don't think so. But
you're a folding phone naysayer. You don't think it's going to happen.
I think it might happen someday. I don't think this year. I think they want to focus on AI. I think they want to get the basic hardware right. There might be one or two other gotcha features, but I don't think Apple wants to go there because I don't think Samsung is selling an insane amount of folding phones. They're selling some, but they haven't outpaced regular phones. So I don't know why Apple would spend all the engineering time on it. I mean, they came out with the iPhone Air and nobody bought it because nobody wanted a thinner phone. I mean, that was a huge flop.
That's true.
So I think they're fine just selling you the same phone every year. But I look at something like, I'm sure you've seen the Samsung privacy screen. You guys don't watch TV commercials. No, this came out on their latest phone. I don't know how they do it, but it's an automatic. You ever see like a privacy screen where unless you're looking at it straight on, it's kind of blocked off? Well, the phone can do that dynamically by pixel. I don't know how they do it. So like when an alert pops up, it's black for people looking at it from the side unless you're looking at it straight on. But just the alert. Or they can do the whole screen. It's very cool. I don't know. I give Samsung credit. They do put cool shit in the phones. To me, that's something I would rather Apple rip that off than a folding phone, you know, something more practical.
That's cool.
Folks, I have to run.
Run! Oh, well, Dan, we'll let you go and then we'll wrap up the show. Okay. But great seeing you, buddy. Say hi to the family for us.
Will do. Thanks for the bread
Enjoy
update.
Dinner.
Bye.
We got to send Dan some bread.
Seriously, overnight it.
Excellent. Colby, anything else on your mind this evening?
You know, the only other thing takeaway I had from this is like all my shit got like aged out. Like my watch is outside the cutoff for the new one. And like,
oh boy,
my phone is going to get the new OS, but is like below the cutoff for like the new whatever, like the best.
The supermodel
or something.
But which phone do you have?
I have a 17, like one generation back.
Yeah. No, it's kind of weird how they make those. I have a 15 and the battery life is kaput. So I'm probably going to get a new one when they announce them in the fall. But you know, no, that's Apple. You're going to age out of it at some point, unfortunately.
Yeah. I just thought I had more time, you know,
I thought I had more time.
Especially the watch, like I don't know, I probably won't do anything because I like really don't care about it. I almost exclusively wear my Apple Watch as like my alarm to get up in the morning.
Like that's
yeah,
because I like being buzzed awake, and I do not like being alarmed awake.
Yeah, that's definitely worth. I don't think you need a new OS to do that.
No,
that's probably smart. Save your money. Buy a third Mac Mini.
yeah, I'll put in my order now and wait 6 months or whatever.
I was about to say get it eventually. Yeah, no, I'm thankfully. Thankfully, I'm not in too bad a shape. But yes, that's the thing about the phone battery life is this thing has like fallen off a after that like 2 to 3 year where all of a sudden it's midday and you have 20% left and you're like, what the hell happened?
What happened?
That's why I'm secretly hoping the OS, all these speed improvements don't come at a cost of battery life. But that's where also this is just a regular iPhone and not a Pro. So that's the other thing I got to keep in mind when I get a replacement.
Right. Well, usually speed, in computers, if something's faster, it means it's doing less stuff. And usually doing less stuff, it's using less battery. So
if Apple just wants to put out the exact same operating system with the exact same features, but it's faster and has better battery life, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need more than that. especially again, like you pointed out, if it's going to last on longer and longer devices, what it goes back to iPhone 11,
right?
Which is kind of impressive if you think about it.
Yeah, that's bonkers.
And so if it's going to run efficiently on that, then that's pretty good. So
I agree.
Yeah, skip the watch by the HomePod with a screen instead.
Yeah, right. That's what I want. I've been waiting for the HomePod with a screen for like 3 years.
I think it's up there with the Dan's portless phone idea and the, right. A few other Apple right. wishes we've had.
I have a Google HomePod with a screen that I would love to replace with a HomePod well, with a screen.
I mean, I'm not joking. I unplugged and got rid of all my Alexa devices. I don't have any of them anymore because I never used them. But the screen makes a difference. So, that's the other thing is it, I'm hoping app developers take advantage of all this stuff because I use very few of the I don't use built in mail. I don't use built in calendar. I don't use a lot of the built in stuff. Mm. And so cause that's where you really get the value.
Right.
I don't use Safari, which maybe I'll pivot. We'll see.
Right.
And so I'm hoping that the Gmail app really takes advantage of it and integrates it and things like that.
Yeah. I do use mail. I don't use Safari very much. What else do I use? I also use the calendar app. But I also use Gmail and the Google. I like my work stuff is on the Google apps and my non-work stuff is on the regular app, the Apple apps.
Well, I used to have them all integrated into like the system apps and then all the connections got all screwed up. And so, like, I had, like, triple all my contacts, and there was duplicates. And so I said, screw it. I'm just not doing it anymore. I'm sure it's gotten better, but I don't think so. But AI is going to fix all that, right?
Yeah, that's what
they say. To make all our lives better.
It's definitely not going to
make
anything
worse. It'll even
mow your lawn. You know, that doesn't sound terrible.
No, it really doesn't until it mows over your foot.
Yeah.
This was great. Hey, great catching up. Glad we could have a little discussion on another WWDC. Colby, you'll be excited to know there's a lot of great things going on over at Podcast Land, the coffee and beer family. We've got a heck of a lineup. We have got up for debate, myself and Matt. We spent all spring playing Dream Daddy, which was an absolute hoot and a ton of fun. I recommend people check it out, especially the video on YouTube of us playing. Now we're in our summer book bullshit where last week we did a whole this or that episode talking about our opinions on books, which was fun. And then this week it actually was kind of a hoot. I like when we just debate stuff. And then this week we are picking our books we're going to read this summer. And I think we got a great selection. So we'll be doing that for the book club. And I don't know what we're doing for movies. Matt's going to Spain for like 3 weeks or something. So the schedule is going to be a little wonky, but we'll figure that out up for debate.tv or wherever you get podcasts. And of course, Matt is still doing Tomorrow's Canceled with the Boys. New episode came out this week, actually talking about all the big summer games announcements over at tomorrowiscanceled.com or subscribe wherever you get podcasts. And of course, twitch.tv/tomorrowiscanceledpod, which is where Matt streams video games 1 to 2 days a week. He's been playing Resident Evil, which has been a hoot. And he's coming up on the end of that. So we'll see what he does next. But you should follow that on Twitch. Of course, our website, don'tpanic.io, built by human hands. This guy, Colby, is a great website. Check it out. The whole archive is there, going back all 13 years, which is kind of incredible. All 410 episodes, as well as information on how to get a hold of us. Up for don'tpanicshow@gmail.com is the email address. You can email us there if you've got any thoughts or opinions on this. But I think that's going to do it for us here. So on behalf of Colby and Dan, I'm Sean. We appreciate you being here. We'll see you next time for another fantastic episode of Don't Panic.